mentioned by Keith this morning, we are so happy to have you with us today here in person. It is a holiday weekend. A lot of our folks are traveling, but we're blessed on those same holiday weekends that we always get a good number of guests who are with us, some of you for the first time, and we thank you for taking the time to be here with us this morning. Our mission as a church is to love God and grow deeper and to share Jesus. Nothing more important in this life. When Jesus was asked what the great commandment was, the greatest commandment, that's what he said: love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. And another one like it: love your neighbor as yourself. And so that is our goal. We want to love God. We want to love Jesus. We want to be what they call us to be. And part of that is also growing deeper in the faith. We live in a lot of ways a very shallow world. A lot of people pursuing things that in the final outcome of things don't make that much difference when all is said and done. But we want to grow deeper in the things that matter. We want to grow deeper in our relationship with God, our relationship with the Lord, our relationships with each other. And then in turn, we want to share Jesus with others. We are not saved for ourselves, just for ourselves. We are grateful for our salvation. We want to share that life with other people by the things we say, the things we do, the way we serve others. And so it's not just a motto. That's who we want to be. And so if at any time in the future you want to explore what that means in your life in a personal way, perhaps you want to make a decision to follow Jesus, be baptized into him, commit your life to him, we want to help you in that. If you want to make Northeast a part of your life in a very concrete and open way, make Northeast your home church, we encourage you to let us know about that. We want to partner with you. And those of you who are viewing online, we want you to know this as well. We want to be your partner in your growth in the faith, because we all need each other, don't we? Amen to that. And so we've been talking about light, and there is a book that came out just the last couple of months, written by Yelena Ruidoso, and it's called Rescued by the Light. Here's a picture of the book cover. I ordered this book as I was preparing this series. I have not finished the book, but it is a compelling book about the difference that God made in the life of a woman who grew up being abused by someone who is a close member of the family. And she relates her story, how God worked in her life to bring about healing, to bring about something in her life that was life-changing, that was transforming, even suffering and dealing with that abuse. And in the book, she talks about times when she would go into certain rooms. She might go to her bedroom and just curl up there in the dark. But when she would do that, she would be struck by the light that was around her. A kind of an interesting dichotomy, that there was a safety in being isolated and being alone and dealing with that in the dark. And yet, at the same time, there was something about the light when it came through the door or when she experienced something else that brought about a perspective that affected her for her whole life. And she said this in the book. She said, from the start, I could trust that light. I could trust that light in a dark room, not knowing what it was about. But anything that brought comfort and relief, I held on to with dear life. We believe in a God who brings light, and we believe in a Lord who shines light upon us in a dark and dreary world where people do terrible, terrible things. You can't watch the news today. You can't go through a day, you can't go through a week without hearing, you know, terrible, terrible news. Keith mentioned what transpired this past week in Texas. It's one of many events like that through the years. Things like that happen all the time. And because there is evil in this world, There are people who are doing what they want to do selfishly, and there are negative results when that happens in the lives of people, whether it's crime or murder or people being cheated or hurt. A lot of darkness in the world today. But I tell you, don't give up. Don't give up, because in Jesus, even in the darkness, there is light. We have to believe that. Zechariah, when John the Baptist was born in that context, he talks about the ministry. The father of John the Baptist talks about his work. And in discussing the work that John the Baptist would do, he says this about Jesus. He says, the coming of Jesus is going to bring which the rising sun will come to us from heaven to shine on those living in darkness. And so there is this image of what Jesus brings to the world, being like the light that comes up from a beautiful sunrise in the morning. And then in Ephesians chapter 5, there's a statement as Paul talks about how we are called to live. And he quotes a saying that says, "Wake up, O sleeper, and rise from the dead." Wake up, O sleeper, and rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. And there are a lot of scholars who believe that this quotation that Paul mentions here in Ephesians 5 is actually from an early song in the church. And it's quoted, and we don't find it in the Old Testament. We don't find it anywhere else in the New Testament. And yet Paul is quoting it to them and talking about how they're to live for Jesus. And he says to them, as it says, wake up, wake up. Rise from the dead and Christ will shine on you. Many believe that is not only a hymn, but a hymn that was sung when someone was baptized into Christ as they began their new life in Jesus, as the Yoda kids experienced last week, and we mentioned that to you. What a joyous thing that is. And so we're told in the book of Philippians that we are to shine among them like stars in the sky. So it's not just a matter of Jesus being the light of the world and Jesus shining on us, as important as that is. It's what that's going to mean in how I live every day. What that's going to mean in my life in a practical way as I live my life and I show my life to others. And so Paul says, do everything without grumbling or arguing so that you may become blameless and pure. Children of God, without fault in a warped and a crooked generation, a dark generation, a dark time. I've talked to people just over the last couple of weeks. We've dealt with a pandemic. We're dealing with a lot of just anger in the world today, a lot of anxiety. And I talked to somebody who said, you know, it's just hard not to get depressed. But as discouraging and depressing as the news may be, whatever it is you may be facing in your life right now that is a struggle that you're wondering how you're going to handle it, we have to believe this truth, that in a dark world we can shine among them like stars in the universe. How many stars in the universe? We talked about it last week. I think I told you maybe the number is, I'm looking it up here because I forgot, a septillion. Give or take a few trillions of billions of trillions. No one knows for sure. So many stars in this vast, vast universe. And I think sometimes when we think about it on that level, we think, you know, I'm tiny, I'm small, I can't make a difference. I'm just a little speck in the universe. And yet, Paul says to them, to the church at Philippi, and he says to us, we can live the kind of life in a dark world around us that will shine like stars in the sky as you hold firmly to the word of life. We mentioned last week that it is in darkness. It is in darkness that light is noticed the most, where we can make the greatest impact. And I noted last week that you don't have to be the biggest star in the sky to make a big difference. You don't have to be the brightest star in the sky to make a big difference. And the Bible tells us that as we live our lives, we can live our lives with such a power that we can shine like a star in the universe. But I noted last week that we first have to take ownership for ourselves. And so in this same passage from Philippians chapter 2, remember what Paul says, "My dear friends, as you've always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling." It's not the idea that I am working for my salvation. It's not a work salvation kind of thing. It's just Paul's way of saying is you need to take responsibility for yourself. You need to take responsibility for yourself, not only for your own life, but how that life relates to others as well. And he says you need to take accountability and take action and do for yourself what you need to do for yourself. Because it not only affects you, it affects everybody around you as well. There's a website you can go to. I read about this in an article, and it's called Handy Written. HandyWryTten. Handy Written. I think it's handywritten.com. It may be handywritten.org. I'm not sure. But it will do something for you if you don't want to do it yourself, and it will take something that you type in the computer. You can say what kind of card you want your message to be put on, put the address of the person you want the note to go to. But the thing about this is it's not just any card. They have robots. They have robots that will write out an actual note with ink. And if you want them to, they will even like do an ink blot or do a scratch out or something to make it look realistic. So it will look like you have actually sent a personal handwritten note to someone else. Now, yeah, so you're looking at each other like, I can't believe this. Okay, isn't that? How many of you have actually used that service? Okay, none of you have actually used it. And I'm thinking, why would somebody want to do that? I mean, isn't there something special about if you want to do something for somebody, you do it yourself, and there is something special about the fact that you touched the card and you actually wrote out what you're going to write, and yet somebody wanted to create something to make it easier for some people who don't like actually writing out handwritten notes. They will do it for you. And so we could have that attitude in our own lives, like, hey, you know, let somebody else do it. Let somebody else take care of it. How many times in our conversations and the things that we do, we'll say something like this. I was talking to our life group about this last week. The famous they. They. How many of you over the last week have said something to the effect, you know, they need to do something about this. They need to blah, 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 blah. Somebody needs to blah, 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 blah. I was telling our group that Jeannie, I can always predict if we are driving along the road and we are at a place where there's trash in the road. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't like trash in the road. I'm not pro trash in the road. I think it's tacky. It's selfish to throw things out of your car. And I know some of the stuff blows out. But Jeannie will almost always say, they need to do something about it. This looks terrible. And that's fine. She can say that if she wants to. But I mean, they won't let you stop on the interstate, I don't think, and just start picking up trash. But I guess maybe you could do it. It's probably against the law. I don't know. But it's one of those things that I can be thinking so much in terms of what other people ought to do or what other people how they ought to act, that I don't do it myself. We had a brother here years ago. This is when I first came to Northeast, and we would have a Bible class, and he would sit in the Bible class. He would sit right over there. And Brother Bill would often say, you know, we're not doing anything. And at that time, we were not involved in a whole lot of ministries. We were trying to do more. We were trying to get going. But basically, all this brother did in Bible class was talk about how we weren't doing things. And the fact was, he had a pet project that he wanted to do. He wanted us to have a radio program, and he wanted us to buy time on a local radio station so we could share the message of Jesus. Nothing wrong with that. Now, we use media today. But it was just his attitude of saying, we're not doing anything, or nobody's doing anything around here. And I think, if I remember right, well, a sister told me that she was in the class, and I, you know, once again, it happened so many years ago, I don't remember maybe necessarily all the details. I do remember him saying this, but a sister who I think went up to him and told him, brother, speak for yourself. Speak for yourself. You don't know what people are doing. You don't know everything that's being done. And just because you are not getting your way and us having a radio program here at Northeast doesn't mean that there aren't people who are making a difference and doing things in the kingdom. The fact is, he probably needed to spend more time actually doing some things in a positive way that would make a positive difference than complaining about things. And a lot of that goes to the question I told you we'd be talking about this issue this week when we ask a couple of questions. And the question is, are you selfish or are you sacrificial? Paul says in the same chapter, Philippians 2, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interest, but each of you to the interest or the needs. Some translations here say the needs of others. None of us likes to admit that we're selfish, right? When was the last time anybody called you selfish recently? Did you love being called selfish? Did you say, man, I really appreciate that compliment. Thank you so much. I mean, that's one of the traits that none of us wants to have with our kids when they're young. They're just children, and we want them to share, and we don't want them to be selfish, and we want them to understand that there is a world out there beyond them that they need to see and understand. But Paul is dealing here in this letter, he is dealing with an issue of conflict. He is dealing with disunity within the church. I mean, once again, you look at what he says early on in the chapter, and he says in the first part, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, any comfort from his love, any fellowship with the Spirit, any tenderness and compassion, they're there. It has the effect of, since you have encouragement from being united with Christ, since there is comfort in his love, he says, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one spirit and purpose, do nothing. And right after that, he says, do nothing out of selfish ambition, but consider others better than yourself. And a little bit farther down in the passage where he talks about us being stars in the universe, the first thing he says before he says that is this: do everything without complaining or arguing. So that has a bearing on my relationship with you and your relationship with me, and where I place myself in my relationship with you, and how I look at you, and how, whether more often it's about me than it's about you, or I always have to get my way, or I'm always right, or I always have to win. Now, within this series, I'm going to be talking about two women, Euodia and Syntyche. He mentions them in chapter 4. And there are many scholars who believe that one of the primary purposes of writing this letter to this church is because this conflict, this disunity in the church, was centered around these two women who were faithful servants of Jesus, And Paul is encouraging them to change their attitude because they're going at it like this. And he says, you have to learn to get along with each other. And part of getting along with others is recognizing that sometimes I have to fight selfish tendencies within my own life. I think of the eagerness sometimes for us to call somebody else selfish, but we don't see it in ourselves, right? And I think I shared these statistics with you maybe a couple of years ago in a different context, but studies that have been done about how people view other people. And one of the things that has come out in surveys that have been done is that a lot of people don't think that they think too much about themselves or think too much of themselves, but they think a lot of other people are the ones who are selfish and want to do things their way, and we wouldn't have this problem or we wouldn't have this issue if it wasn't for you. But Paul, in talking about being light in this world and talking about being different and being a shining star, is encouraging us and encouraging them. To look out for number one. A lot of life is spent looking out for number one. It's about me, myself, and I. It's about my needs. It's how people view me. And a lot of that is fueled, a lot of that is really, really fueled by social media. Experts have said when they look at some of the personality and the depression that people are dealing with today, it's because of a self-centeredness that has become so myopic in the lives of some that everything in terms of who they are is measured by how other people respond to them, and especially on social media. There's an actress, and her name is Lauren Cohan. I couldn't even tell you what she looks like, but I read this in an article. And she was, I think she was in The Living Dead, if I remember that right. But anyway, she's being interviewed about her life, and she talks about how she has taken a pause from social media. And it helped her on a path to positive thinking, because she said she could get caught up in this, in seeing how you are in relationship to others. And she says in this article, she says, you'll never be as happy as long as you're worrying about yourself. And then she goes on to say, it's because I'm letting my ego spin out of control. I worry about job security, losing something, not getting something. I thought I was supposed to achieve. I didn't want that inner monologue anymore. So now what she says she does when she's feeling anxious about who she is and how people are responding to her and whether people like her and all of that stuff, she says, I try to do something that is outside of myself. And so I will try to reach out to friends, or I will go volunteer at an organization that helps school children with their homework and music and other things as well. She says that's what she does because she understands, and we ought to understand as well, that it's not always about looking out for number one. And it's about answering this question as well. Do I need to grow up? Do I sometimes act like a baby in my relationship with others? Can adults act like little children? Well, we certainly can, right? I told you last week about the pouting that I did because a couple of things didn't go well for me, and I had to pay more money for something, and it took Jeannie to say some things to me in a loving but a firm way. Sometimes I need that. To let me know that I'm not the only one who's, you know, paid for something and thought I paid too much for it. Or the only person who has something not go well and then takes that out on other people by being grumpy or being a grouch. Sometimes we need to grow up. And so the answer the key answer. And almost all the issues or problems or challenges we face is this right here. And that is, if there is more of this in our lives, there's going to be less of the other things that not only hurt ourselves, but hurt other people. Paul says, let this mind, let this attitude be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. In your relationships with each other, you need the mind of Christ, and you need to display the mind of Christ. You need to know the mind of Christ. You need to grow and seek and long in such a way that you want to be, that I want to be so full of Jesus that we can truly say we have His mind. We've been equipped. We've been reborn. We've been made new. We are a new creation in Christ. We have everything we need to live the kind of life that God calls us to. It's just a matter of putting those things into practice and focusing on those things that will help us dig deeper into the mind of Christ and to be Christ. And that is done by recognizing what He has done. The text says that who being in very nature God, that was who He was. He did not have to grasp at what it meant to be God. It was His. It belonged to Him. He did not have to reach out to be divine. And yet, He was willing to let things go. He made Himself nothing. One translation says, another translation there says He emptied Himself and became nothing. So this God, this God who is indeed the Lord, who is indeed the center of the universe, the one who has every right because of who He is to demand everything from everyone else. Totally dependent upon Him. The same Jesus being spoken of in the book of Colossians. It says He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by Him all things were created. Things in heaven, things on earth, visible, invisible. Whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by Him and for Him. And it goes on to say, He is the head of the church, the body. The one who by right has top priority in everything and deserves it. And this is kind of a weird way to think of it, but if anybody has a right to be self-centered, it's God. He doesn't need us. He doesn't need anything. And yet God's nature is also to give and share and love. That relationship existed in the Godhead before the creation of the world, before we came along, before we were created. And He did that, experienced humanity in every way. I cannot begin to grasp the meaning of what it means for God to become a human being and take on all the vulnerabilities that we experience, including temptation, and He didn't sin. I can't begin to understand it, but I can appreciate it. And it can make a difference in my life, how I live, how I treat others. Because here's the fact, we're all humbled at the foot of the cross. We are all equal at the foot of the cross. We all have the same needs at the foot of the cross. And so God calls us to live differently. And our priorities change. It goes from me, myself, and I to Jesus first. And then others. Paul says, once again, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourself. Others and then yourself. Don't have time this morning to look at Timothy and Epaphroditus, but this week, I encourage you every week, over the next several weeks, read the entire book of Philippians, but this week especially, take a look at this passage in the latter part of Philippians chapter 2. And Paul describes two men who went to great lengths to do for others in the kingdom of God. In fact, Epaphroditus, we are told, he risked his own life. Risked his own life. Was willing to serve others in a way that would risk himself so that others could be served. What a great example they are for us. And so let's remember as I come to a close this morning, let's remember in sacrificial living, there is risk and reward. And the risk is when I serve others, when I put others first, when I meet their needs, there's always a chance that they're not going to appreciate it. There's a chance they won't say thank you. There's a chance when we love others and we sacrifice for others, there's always a chance that someone may take advantage of me. Yet sometimes we need to go ahead and take that risk and love others because we know it is going to make a difference and there is going to be a reward. Because in the risk that God took for us, there was a payoff. And that was a payoff in terms of what He wanted for us because He loved us so much. He wanted to have fellowship with us and live forever with us. And for us to enjoy the life and the fellowship that we were meant for, that we were created for. And yet God takes a risk in that He will not force that on us. He invites us into it. And so as we serve others and put others first, we may face the same risk, but we're willing to do it anyway because we know that we will encourage others by our presence, by our caring presence, by being concerned about the needs of others and not just the needs of ourselves, just being there. And as I look out and I see some people here this morning, I see Gene in a wheelchair and Doyle in his scooter. And I know others, I think of Bernice, she passed away this week. And those of you who knew her and appreciated her knew that she would wheel in here in that wheelchair. And I tell you, it was not about any more for them or Carl. He passed away this year, 93 years old, baptized at 90. He would come in here with that walker, just shuffling those feet. He didn't do that because he wanted to punch his time clock or God was going to strike him down if he didn't come to church. It wasn't that. It was that worship to God mattered and worship to God with others mattered. And so just by being here, some of you speak to us and encourage us. Jesus, in describing the judgment scene in Matthew 25, he says, when he speaks to the sheep, he said, I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty. You gave me something to drink. I was naked and you clothed me. I was in prison. You visited me. I was sick and you took care of me. I was a stranger and you took me in. Listen, all the things we plan and do here, it's not to make people busy. It's not to impress others or make people think that we're religious. And, you know, I signed up for life groups, and I'm doing a Bible class, and I'm doing food and fellowship, and man, look at me, I'm doing all these things. Listen, it's about our need for each other, and it's about serving each other, and it's about that point that Nick made 2 weeks ago. And some of you said, you know, some of you admitted that you were planning on leaving a couple of weeks ago when Nick challenged you to take that simple step and to go down there and say something to these kids and encourage them and get to know them. Yeah, there's a risk involved. But we do it. We make sacrifices. We serve others. We sign up for City Gospel Mission or Matthew 25. It's not to earn brownie points. It's because of who we are. It's because of who you are. So there are going to be a lot of opportunities for you this summer to do things for others. And you don't need a program to do that. You don't need us sending out a sign-up sheet to do that. But it's a way to do things. It's a way to get connected. It's a way to put the needs of others above ourselves. So whether it's Matthew 25 or City Gospel Mission, or whether it's doing something for Focus on Youth, whatever it might be, remember that you are doing these things because God is calling you to be a light, and God is calling you to live a sacrificial life instead of a selfish life. Doesn't mean you have to sign up for everything and do everything. It's a matter of, as Jesus invested himself in us, in you, he calls upon you to invest yourself sacrificially in the lives of others. And by doing that, you can be a star. You can be a star. Jesus said, I'm the light of the world. I am the light of the world. But he also said, you are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Therefore, do good to others. Treat them right. Serve them so that they might see those good works and glorify your Father in heaven, who is the light.